From the center of the universe, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, this is the SDM Show with your host, Rob Cairns. The SDM Show focuses on business, life, productivity, digital marketing, WordPress, and more. Sit back, relax, grab your favorite drink, and enjoy the show. Here is Rob.
Hey, everybody. I'm Rob Cairns. I'm the founder, CEO, and chief creator of Amazing Ideas, a stunning digital marketing. In today's podcast, I sit down with my good friend, Simon Harper, and we talk about how to use MailChimp for lead generation. Grab a drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation that Simon and I had. This episode of the SDM Show is sponsored by Stunning Digital Marketing, the agency to handle all your WordPress website security needs. Go on over to stunningdigitalmarketing.com and find out how we can help you secure your website so you no longer have an issue with backups, being hacked, or your website being compromised. That's stunningdigitalmarketing.com. Hey, everybody. Rob Cairns here. And in today's podcast, I'm here with my good friend Simon Harper, and we're going to talk a little bit about MailChimp, a little bit around WordPress. How are you today, Simon?
I'm very good. Very pleased to be here. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure to have you. We met, I guess, really good. We hang around in the same circles, but in a LinkedIn group, and it's been such a pleasure having you there and sharing your wisdom all the time. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
So I'd like to always start off and ask, I know it's not the focus of today, but you spend a lot of time in WordPress design and development, as well as email marketing. Can you share with us your marketing / WordPress origin story, please?
Yeah, I've got a blog about it on LinkedIn running at the minute, explaining to everyone about it. But a quick sort of overview is that I was in a job out of university, and it was a job that was just not great, not what I wanted to do, and I couldn't get actually into a job from my university qualification. So I just thought, do you know what, I'm going to turn a passion and a love into a business, and set up my own business in April 2009 in basically website design and development, and the marketing alongside that for myself. And then everything sort of grew out of there. So I think it's year 14 of working with WordPress.
So you've been at it for a while. I think I'm going on about year 14 or year 15. I've lost count.
Yeah. So,
and it's funny, as we're recording this, and I normally don't put dates in podcasts, but it's actually WordPress's 19th birthday today. So happy birthday to WordPress.
Happy birthday.
So you spend a lot of time email marketing.
Yes.
You use MailChimp primarily. I believe you're a MailChimp partner. Is that correct?
Yep, MailChimp partner and a Klaviyo partner. And I sit on the inaugural customer advisory board for MailChimp as well.
Oh, good. So one of the things I think is, and we've all heard the phrase, the money's in the list. And I think a lot of people don't do email marketing because they're scared. I think everybody and every business should do some sort of email marketing. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think particularly with the introduction of iOS 14 and what it's done to ads. And then obviously we've had iOS 15 since September that was looking at the impact of email marketing with regards to privacy and data tracking. And I think particularly it's been a lot more easier to manage iOS 15 while also respecting user privacy, which is absolutely paramount. But they've kind of really struggled to get around the correct reach, attribution data, and impact that ads used to have before. So there's never been a better time to reinvest in your email marketing, but it can't be done in isolation. Every sort of aspect of marketing forms part of a cycle that, you know, whatever touch points you have for your brand, whatever reach, they should all link back to each other and work together and inform each other in some way, particularly with all the privacy changes that we have coming in from this year and 2023 as well. We're going to have to rely on all of our marketing channels much more. And email is one of those ones that is synonymous with our daily work. So it's a very important thing to invest in and do it correctly, because it's very easy to do it wrong.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, you know, it's funny when you say about privacy, and now we've got browsers like Brave and Vivaldi that actually stop all the tracking cookies. So it makes it really harder to do retargeting ads. Is probably harder and harder today than ever before. Yeah. And I find for clients and myself, ad conversions are way down. In certain sectors, you can't, we were talking before, you actually can't run ads. So yeah, that's a bit of a problem. And I actually think email has kind of had a resurgence during the pandemic. And what's caused it is everybody's ordering online. So everybody's checking their email more to find out the status of their orders. So it's a great time to slip into that inbox and say, here's something of value, have a read.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The pandemic, I think, obviously, it completely shifted our habits online, and particularly with e-commerce. So whilst we became used to having our inboxes flooded even more, whenever it came to separating out those transactional email messages, the likes of, you know, your abandoned cart reminders, your receipts, it became in some ways harder to actually gain the attention of users with just a normal marketing email. So and particularly with iOS 15 and open rates and what is a real open or what's a bot open from Apple, yep, it's become even more paramount to plan out your emails, think about the content, and focus on your, not just your subject lines, but also your preview text as well, to try and grab that sort of initial attention. Because now, like ever before, we're competing. Well, I'm scared at how many emails I get a day. I don't count, and I certainly don't look at the bubble on my phone of how many are unread. It's terrifying.
Yeah, it's so true. I always joke with people, I manage my inbox and all the stuff I subscribe to with a very convoluted set of rules. So it basically means anything that's not a client-focused email or a receipt. So if it's like a mailing list, something I've got to read later, it's going to go elsewhere. It disappears out of that inbox very quickly.
Smart.
And I don't even do it. I use Google Workspaces for email, and, you know, it just, I must have 250 rules set up to manage that inbox, and I just keep adding to it because it's just easier.
Filters and labels and subfolders are a godsend. I use Workspace as well. I love it.
we both would be dead without it. So that's, you know, another story. I wanted to share with you a little story. Sure. And I don't know if you saw it around email marketing before we jump into specifics. And there was a Republican senator wannabe, so that's part of the issue, running for office in the U.S. And 2 weeks ago, he made Gmail trending.
Yes,
and the reason he made Gmail trending, and I actually ranted about it on this podcast too, was he was claiming that all his emails were going to spam. Now, I don't know for sure, but and he was accusing Gmail of election interference, which is a pretty high task when you want to make laws and you don't understand big tech. But that's another story altogether. And I suspect what he was doing was he was CCing or BCCing all these potential voters. And we all know that's one of the reasons you should use an email program, because if you put too many people in a BCC or a CC, you're going to spam.
Yeah, the email deliverability is a huge, huge issue. And I think nowadays, ESPs, you know, email service providers, whoever you use for it, they're probably the best route to go down. Still not perfect, but you've sure got a good shot at doing it, rather than using, you know, your standard email address, or even worse, a personal email address to do things, because it's just not built for it. And I think spam filters are getting very smart. I think personally, from my experience and certainly my experience with clients. We all have our thoughts on Outlook and Microsoft. Outlook's a terrible email client, although their new Outlook, which is in beta at the minute, is very exciting and actually looks like it's they're moving away from the Word rendering engine. Why they use Word is beyond me, to a web-based rendering engine, so it will actually work with modern email standards. But their spam filters are ridiculous, as in they're so strict, it just ruins everything. Gmail's is incredibly smart and very good, so it's ironic that I think it was Josh Hawley or whatever was the senator. I think, you know, picking a fight with probably one of the best spam AI or spam algorithms out there is an interesting one. Plus, I tried to stay out of politics, but I would imagine that, yes, he or his email marketing team were doing something that they shouldn't have been doing, whether it was intentional or unintentional.
Yeah, it's so true. I try to stay out of politics too. So email open rates.
Yes.
That's a biggie. And I know people get hung up on email open rates, and I look at them. I should tell you, I run a list of about 8,000, not on MailChimp, just because for me, ConvertKit was the way to go. So, and I'm not knocking MailChimp, so I don't mean that at all. And I'm running open rates anywhere from 60 to 80% on a list of 8,000. And that's just incredible. I think the typical open rates are probably 10 to 20%, I would think, in our industry. I could be wrong, but I think they're somewhere in that neighborhood. Open rates are all about trust, don't you think?
Yeah, certainly to an extent, pretty much in the past, open rates were fairly reliable, mostly reliable. It just depends what tech stack your email service provider's using. I mean, ConvertKits is very good. Nathan Barry's done a great job there. But I think just the biggest change that we've had, and this is where it really comes in of sort of who you're using at the minute in terms of your ESP, is IS-15 open rates. So Gmail, we know, is automatically actually opening your emails. It does it in a slightly different way, and it does it to a lesser extent, and we don't really know fully how it works, although I think we know. And that's been going on for a while. So you've two of the biggest email providers automatically opening your emails and clicking links on your behalf for your own protection and your safety behind the scenes. So it looks like, you know, you've opened the email whenever you haven't. So you open your email app and it's there as an unread. But as far as your email campaign is aware, it has actually been opened. And this is where the biggest thing has come in now of how do we mitigate, or how do we understand Apple users and all the various different versions of Apple Mail, or even the Apple Mail app is the biggest issue, because you can throw any email address in there and it automatically falls under the mail privacy protection rules if it's enabled. So I think open rates are, it's debatable among the email industry, and like whether they're a vanity metric or not. They're certainly useful in a number of circumstances, and I don't think they should be fully ignored, but they definitely are not as important as they used to be, and have to be taken, I think, in consideration with a whole load of other metrics as well, but not to be completely ignored either. And if you do have an ESP that can accurately detect whenever Apple is opening an email or not, then open rates are still very important. It just depends.
I would agree with you. So let's jump in to MailChimp.
Sure.
Why do you like MailChimp, Simon?
Why do I like MailChimp?
Here's a question.
Yeah, there's loads of reasons. I mean, every ESP has its positives and its negatives, and it suits different people. I mean, for example, each one sort of works on their own advertising niche. You've got ConvertKit looking at creatives and bloggers and that sort of industry. Klaviyo, wherever you are and how you want to pronounce it, focusing more on the e-commerce side of things. And even there, shifting their focus more to privacy first data. And then obviously the worst kept secret in the world ever last year, I think it was nearly a year now that it's happened, Intuit bought MailChimp out, because MailChimp essentially, it's just so much more than an email platform.
But I think I still don't understand, not to cut you off, I don't understand marriage. Intuit's a Canadian company.
It is.
They're the biggest company in financial services. So they own like QuickBooks. That's their flagship product. They own QuickTax or TurboTax, as it's now called, which is Canada US, is their second flagship product. So I'm still, when they made that buy, I have to tell you, I fell off my chair. Because there was billions of dollars involved.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that marriage. Do you?
I think that they've bought, and this is one of the reasons going, sort of answering your question originally, one of the reasons I think is because MailChimp is so much more than just an ESP. It's, you know, it's a full CRM. You know, you can pretty much do so much with it in terms of managing customer profiles within it, client profiles, however you want to label them, user profiles. You can build your landing pages, you can build websites, e-commerce websites, you can do appointments now, and you've even got snail mail with their postcards feature, and you've got all the e-com built in. I think there's definitely some SMS transactional stuff going on in relation to their events and appointment systems. But one of my favorite features with them is the AI in it for what they call the creative assistant. And it recently got a big update as well to now include animations, where basically if you've no real graphic design skills, or you're a marketer and you are on a budget or you're on a time scale, you can basically use this creative assistant tool to input the brand's URL, and it'll automatically pull fonts and colors from the website and some sample images, and you can verify whether they're correct or not, and then give some additional information about the tone of the business or the messages, and then off you go. You can generate a wealth of automatically designed content to fill your emails with, your landing pages. It's mind-blowing. And now they've added animations to it as well, where the AI can create animations, GIF animations for your website or for your emails. And it's having sort of all those tools in one place just makes it a great choice.
That's so cool. That is actually a really cool feature. I can see that being so useful. And I think they're the only ones out there doing that. I'm just kind of thinking through a pile of email services I've used for clients, and I've probably used everything under the sun, including MailChimp.
Yeah.
And still am, by the way. I mean, the popular ones are ConvertKit, ActiveCampaign, MailChimp, I would say. I hate to say it, Infusionsoft Keep is still pretty popular on some high-end stuff. And I don't think any of those are doing anything close to that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, like I said before, they all have their positive negatives and their own niches and some unique features. But I think that sort of creative assistant AI technology for the creation of actual content is not being used anywhere else yet. You're right. And the great thing about it is, depending on what plan you're on, you can export the data out of there as well and use it. So you can, it's almost like a mini Canva in some ways as well, although it does integrate, MailChimp does integrate with Canva, but you can export your creations and upload them to social media. So create like Facebook post images, Twitter, Instagram, all those types. It's quite a rabbit hole you can go down, and it's one that most people don't really sort of use or know about. It's definitely my favorite feature by far, the creative assistant. It's phenomenal.
And I think one of the biggest attractions to MailChimp is they're one of those providers that still have a lifetime free account to get people on the platform.
Yeah. And I personally find, and I think, you know, it needs refined, that the pricing page is very confusing. There's two or three different sections within it, and then multiple tiers depending on what your needs are. But it's tailored towards, obviously, because MailChimp does so much more now than just email, that it's trying to tailor itself towards a number of users and price points and needs. But it's very invested, and this is what I can say has been great about being in the cab and its users and learning from them. I mean, like, it's the biggest ESP by far. I mean, it has tens of millions more users than any other ESP. Yeah. And that doesn't necessarily make it the best for everyone, but it's the amount of time that they're innovating and spending time learning from their users of what's working, what's not. And that's one of the best things that I've experienced. Just going back to your original question, even of WordPress and SaaS, MailChimp is very much about community. And it's this probably even more so from a professional, like not a user perspective, but from the other side, being an email marketer, the thing that I value the most, the community that MailChimp has built around it to help us do our jobs better, as well as use MailChimp to the maximum, has just been unreal. And I know lots of other ESPs try to create that culture of community. And again, I'm sure there's great communities within there, but just for me, I haven't seen anything like MailChimp's that's even come close, with the exception of WordPress, which is obviously a diverse but huge community, but there's a lot of similarities between them, and that's probably why I feel so akin between the two.
I'm sure, and I would agree with you, community matters. I know, having spent a lot of time building out campaigns in Infusionsoft, for a company that charges so much, and for a company that does so much, the two things they don't do really well, in my opinion, is training people and the community. And that, to me, is an issue. They even went so far as to cut back their yearly conferences pre-pandemic. It had nothing to do with the pandemic. It started cutting back all the stuff. And there's a lot of partners that have actually turned away from it because of that. And we're starting to see more and more of these SaaS type products that run within WordPress because of that. And the other thing I'll say is, the only thing I've even found close to MailChimp's community is probably ConvertKit. It's pretty strong. I know I've done a lot of work with ActiveCampaign over the years, and their community, you're on your own. there's nothing wrong. And the other knock against them is their interface is so 20 years ago. It just drives me insane. Like, we're in like 2022. We need a graphical interface. We need a, you get what I'm saying, right? We need an easy way to do things.
Yeah, modern UI certainly makes things a lot easier, particularly now, because so many people are used to drag and drop email builders and drag and drop website builders, and it is very much the thing. And I don't think we'll ever go back to how it was before. Which I don't think is a bad thing.
I don't think so either. The only argument is it brings in all the DIY people, and my argument to that is they still need help. So,
yeah,
you know, you can be a hobbyist and do it, but unless you've sat down with a professional, they don't know what works, what has to work, you know, et cetera.
Yeah.
So let's jump into emails in general. What really works in the types of emails that you send out? I think one of the things people don't do well is when somebody subscribes, they send them an email saying, thank you for subscribing. I think personally, that's a lost opportunity. You should build yourself out what we call a nurture sequence, and showcase some of your good content or your good products in that. I really do. And then I think the other place people get into problems with emails is they're not consistent. So what are your thoughts on those?
Well, I'll answer the second one first, the consistency thing. 100% agree that people notice more often when you're not there rather than when you are there. So, you know, if you're going to say, I'm going to send out a weekly email, and you do that, and then all of a sudden you don't do it for 3 weeks, all of a sudden appear like, hey, where did you go? And they don't really necessarily acknowledge you whenever you're consistently sending those emails out. Consistency is also actually important for even this side of the pond as well, whenever it comes to GDPR, because you can do very simple things when on your website sign up form saying, by the way, I'm going to send you, and I'm being a bit facetious here, but it still applies. I'm going to send you one email a week on the last Sunday of each month at 2 p.m. You know, that actually fulfills a lot of helpful criteria for GDPR and what people can expect. But obviously, I'm not even going to start that GDPR conversation. I can go down a big rabbit hole with that one. But consistency is by far the most important thing, and to set expectations. And if you do miss a week, and that's okay, you can miss a week or whatever your time period is, but just communicate to your audience why. Because we have this unique opportunity with email. It's different from other forms of marketing where people have chosen to sign up. You know, they've given us this great blessing of actually wanting to hear from us. So we owe it to them to give them good content, to be consistent, to be present. And I think if you build up a level of consistency as well from a writing perspective, it makes writing easier. And if you're regularly writing that content, and you improve and you sharpen each week. And then your first question in terms of those sort of welcoming sequences, no matter what ESP you use, they are going to generally be your most highly engaged emails that are sent out. And the biggest mistake I sort of see is what you've said as well. If it's just a quick, you know, thank you, or they use the ESP's default welcome email instead of creating a welcome email or a series, depending on what you want to do or what you have to offer, and leaving it static. That's what cracks me up even more. They've gone down this route of going, right, I'm going to customize this, I'm going to personalize it so that they're getting the right content at the right time, and I'm going to accelerate them through to wherever I want them to go, but then it's left and forgotten about. And those types of welcome campaigns are evergreen, and they should be evergreen. So you should be going back and looking, going, look, is it Father's Day? Is it Mother's Day? Is it Christmas? What seasonal? What is going on in the world around me at this time? Have we launched a new product? Are we speaking on a podcast? Are we doing a webinar? You know, is there something that's going on that a user could be signing up at this point, and they need to hear something even more personal and even more relevant? And that's the thing that cracks me up the most, where I sit there going, look at all these lost opportunities, particularly for e-commerce businesses, where they just have the bog standard welcome email. And it's just like, it's just not good enough.
E-commerce businesses are worse. They have a thank you page that says, thank you for buying my product. Not, here's an opportunity. And to me, that is the biggest missed opportunity in e-commerce. Use those thank you pages. Use those thank you emails for upsells, to even to get people engaged, to like use those pages.
Yeah, upsells, cross-sells, everything. Like there's a client that I have that we even use their review emails. So whenever a customer purchases a product, we'll send them out review reminder emails. And even those are designed in such a way, in a non-annoying, spammy way, because it does work, to get them to spend again. So we get them to actually leave a review, but also they have an opportunity then to go and buy something else as well. Now, that doesn't work for everyone, because sometimes just, you know, standard product review emails are what should be done. But even customizing your receipts, and not just having a bog standard receipt, and having even related products in there, but not generic related products that are personalized to that customer.
And they do work. So I'll give you an example. I spoke at the Adorim Summit last month.
Yes.
We won't even talk about the technology problems I had. Okay. That's another story. I decided to lose my internet connection in the middle of my talk.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that was fine. It came back and we went back at it.
Good.
And I was talking about podcasting. And one of the things I did was, I have a podcast mini course, and anybody who attended the talk, I gave it away.
Wow.
I normally charge $49 for it. I decided I'd give it away. And I had a sequence so that to get the free course, you had to go to a landing page. You had to sign up on an email. That's where you got the link and the code to get it for free. So you weren't getting it unless you got in the mailing list. That's just the way it goes. And then I had a follow-up sequence to sell some individualized training. I had three people spend over $1,000 each on individual training, all because it was in the follow-up sequence. I didn't mention it anywhere else. It's not, that particular training's not even mentioned on a page on a website. And because of the follow-up sequences and reminders, I had somebody email me last night saying, I've been sitting on this for 2 weeks. Where do I get signed up?
Nice.
So they do work. And because it's automated and you don't have to do it manually and evergreened, it's easy to set up. You set it up once. And what I would say to anybody is do yourself a favor. If you set up automated sequences, test them.
Oh, yes.
Too many people don't test them. And they don't test the content. They don't test it to responsive. They don't test how they look. Like, don't just set them up and go, actually test them.
And go back and test them a while later as well. Don't just test them at the start, because sometimes things can break and sometimes things can go wrong, and that's not necessarily your fault, but something could have changed in the platform and you've maybe missed it, or maybe you changed something and you didn't even realize that you did it. 100% testing. You can't do enough of it.
And if somebody reaches out to you and says, hey, there's a problem with your sequence, do something for them. Yeah. Like I had a sequence that had been running and my platform wasn't MailChimp, was ConvertKit. It broke it because something changed. Somebody reached out to me and said, there's a problem with the sequence. And what did I do? I took one of my $50 courses and I gave it to them.
Brilliant.
And said, here you go. Here's a thank you. And that goes a long way, Simon. It just, because then he feels like I'm responsive. And he's turned around and bought other stuff. So, you know, you have to be appreciative and engage with your community. Like, the biggest complaint I have in email marketing is big box stores. Do not reply at oldnavy.com. That's nice. Yeah. So you're telling me you don't want to talk to me. Don't
get me started on do not reply email addresses.
Oh, I want you to get started. Please do. Go ahead.
You know, maybe in B2B or maybe at work sometimes, there's Naomi West does, she's done a brilliant talk on our blog post on no reply email addresses and why you shouldn't really use them. She summarizes it very well. And I think it ties in sort of what you were alluding to sort of there as well, and going back to community and, you know, big box stores. Mm-hmm. And I was saying about personalization as well, is that we are unique in that we've got this subscriber who has said, look, I want to hear from you. And it is an honor to have them in there. So don't just treat them like a number or a statistic. It's important to make your subscribers, as you say, feel like you actually care about them and that the information is important. So what people see as well, and this thing, it comes down to deliverability, and we talked about it at the start with subject lines and preview text. Sometimes the first thing that people see is also the email address that it's come from, and as you say, if it's a no reply or something even more bland or generic of marketing at, it's kind of like, oh, okay, so am I going to get a response from this? Is it just going to go into a black hole? And often these no replies are actually catch-alls, so they do actually go somewhere. So you can't actually reply, even though it says that you can't. But I have seen a lot of good traction build up from, particularly for SaaS companies, whereby the email, even if it's not actually coming from, it's changed to the founder's name, or it's changed to one of the marketing team's name or support team's name. And whenever somebody realizes that, oh, hang on, this could be a real human, the people open up a lot more and more willing to then hit that reply button or continue the conversation on.
Yeah, the trick I use is, I do two tricks.
Okay.
I brand all my emails with SDM in square brackets at the start of email.
Okay.
And the reason I do that is it teaches people to look for that. I've trained people to look for that. And then the other thing I do is I send my emails, not from my email account. I take a different approach. I send it from VIP at my domain name.
Okay.
And the reason I do VIP at, the words VIP make people feel important. And I say right in the first paragraph, if you ever want to reply to this email, make a comment, hit reply, and we'll get back to you. I say that in every email I send. It's called action. If you want to throw something out, hit reply and we'll talk to you. And I've had conversations and I've generated business out of those replies. So I think the reason I use VIP ad, it just makes people feel special.
Yeah, it's certainly a nice thing to feel important. I think we all like to feel important and feel cared about. So that's a nice idea. I use my, instead of using my company name, I just use my name.
I know you.
Yeah.
So. And your emails are pretty consistent. Like you've got the consistency factor down.
Oh, yeah, tell me about it. It's 3 a week for nearly a year.
Now, do you write those ahead of time? You don't?
Sometimes, but as you can tell, obviously from the podcast, I like to talk, so it's easy for me to write as well. But yes. I do try to think during the week of what might be coming up. But sometimes it's just, I'm just going to write about this today, and that's how it goes. I'm quite ad hoc that way. Doesn't quite work like that with my clients. There's a lot more strategy and planning done for those. Yeah. But normally, my working week impacts then what I'm actually going to write. As well.
And what's going on. So an example of that was in my emails, I did Tuesday this week because Monday was a Canadian holiday. So okay. I never publish on a Canadian holiday. And it was all reminders to my clients and my readers about the WordPress upgrades coming because we know what happened last week.
Yeah.
And then Thursday was a quick follow-up. And it's just that was a state of mind. But when I write my emails, it's interesting. I have a format I use. So I like to talk about typically what's important up at the top. Then I'll talk about what podcasts I've released. I also throw out business tips, like links to some good tips. They can either be productivity, they can be other stuff. And I have the same format every week because I think format consistency matters for clients and readers too as well.
Yeah, and I think I'm pretty much the same as you in terms of I use the same structure for my emails each week. And one of the things that I like doing, and I haven't seen too many other places, and it does quite well for me, is at the top of the email, I'll talk about what was said last week. So it's literally the words last week, and they're linked, and then whatever we talked about last week in that particular letter, and then it's only a short line, and then we head on to this week, is the next one. And it's nice to remind people of maybe what was said before, particularly if they're new subscribers. It gives them a good opportunity to go back and read previous issues and remind them what's going on. Give people some context, I suppose.
The other thing is, and I have a problem with this, and I know being marketers, sometimes we do. I'm not a big fan of making my headlines too clickbaity. I'm really not. And the reason I'm not, I think headlines are important, but if you make them too clickbaity, I think that erodes trust. And for me, that's a big issue.
I think
in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's clickbaits have their place. Yeah, I'm not a massive fan either, but I think that ideally your subject line as a basic principle should at least you can go into it more in your preview text, because depending on the email app that people are using or software, you've a lot more characters to play around with. But because you're tied to a certain number of characters that you know are going to work in everything whenever it comes to a subject line, you have to do things short and succinctly. So I think it needs to summarize in an engaging way what the overall message is of that particular issue or newsletter and what you're trying to get across. But if you can avoid, and this is the thing whenever it comes to spam filters or the promotions folder in Gmail, which is the inbox, I think people are like, how do I stay a promotions folder? It's like, you can't, it's still the inbox. Stop worrying about the promotions folder. But your language certainly impacts where your email could potentially end up. So if you do consistently use really clickbait generic titles that a lot of people use. As you say, it's not really going to stand out. It's not really going to grab people. You might get the odd hit, but yeah, it just doesn't work. I think where you get good subject lines as well as you learn and you understand your audience and you build that relationship up with them, so they'll learn how you communicate and they'll learn how you speak and you have this natural language together, and you can write a subject line that will appeal to them. That's where it comes back to what you said earlier on as well, testing whenever it comes to welcome series. So A/B test your subject lines, test and see which works, and some will hit, some will miss, but eventually you'll get a consistency where you know what works for your audience, and depending on how many clients you work with, those audience are going to speak a different language from each other, and it's about figuring out which works for each of them.
Yeah, and words do matter. So I'll give you an example of that. Oh, yeah. And it's not really tied to mailing lists, but it's tied to spam filters. So my mother's a real estate agent, and her office for a long time would put the words price in the subject line. And every time you throw the word price in the subject line, yes, where that email goes into a spam filter. So we all know, and I used to say to my mom, tell your office to stop putting that word in the subject line. And well, that's how they do it. Well, then that's how the spam filters work. And you and I both know there's certain words that they just train on and pick up, and there's nothing you can do about them.
There's certain trigger words for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I mean, go ahead.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it would be nice if we knew exactly what all the different inbox providers use as their spam listener spam criteria. That would make things a lot easier. But there's certain marketers who won't be named, but are on Twitter, who regularly post unbelievably terrible email marketing subject line advice as well. And the thing is that it gathers traction, and then everybody's all of a sudden using it and sending the same subject lines, which has this knock-on effect of making things even more spammy and clickbaity than what they were before. But hey, there you go.
Yeah, it's true. Speaking of Twitter marketers, did you read the thread that was going on about how there were some local marketing agencies in the UK that were doing their clients a disservice because they didn't really know what they were doing, yet they were high-priced?
I think I saw something about this, possibly I saw it this morning. Remind me.
Yeah, they were talking about how there were some local agencies in the UK, and I don't remember who started it, but I did catch it because Nathan Wrigley jumped in on it, and they were saying how some of these agencies, despite charging thousands of pounds, doing the client a disservice.
I knew what this was. This was Mike Oliver started this, and I jumped in and said, yes, we have certain agencies over here that do that, and I did. I won't name them on this podcast, but I did name one that is synonymously known over here.
Yeah. And Mike's a pretty sharp guy, actually.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I mean, nowadays, clients' patience is quite short, rightly or wrongly. So a lot of agencies don't necessarily have a lot of client retention as well. It's hard to keep a client that if you don't produce those results, they're like, right, we're gone and we're moving on to another agency. So I think it's really important whenever we're on this subject, you can now hear a train going by possibly, but whenever we're on this subject of authenticity and actually being able to do what you say you can do, that I think that's really important in email marketing as well. So like, yes, I can use other ESPs and I do, but MailChimp is sort of my niche. And like, I can work with Klaviyo and I'm a Klaviyo partner, but MailChimp is what I do because I know that platform inside and out. And I would then niche down again a little bit further into that and say, well, I do normal traditional sort of email marketing, but I love and I prefer doing e-commerce. And I think the email community, like everything, it's so big. And there's so much out there. I mean, like, you've got the guys over even at ConvertKit, and one of their community side focuses is Deliverability Defined, which is one of the best podcasts sort of that I think is out there. And you have email markers that focus just on deliverability and auditing and setting up accounts. So they won't necessarily create campaigns, but they'll go in and make sure that your accounts are set up in the right way and give you best practices and look for patterns or anything that's going on that to help you solve issues. And I think that's the thing. If you're going to be hired by a prospective client and they want you to do X, Y, and Z, if you can only do A, B, and C, don't waffle, don't make it up, because you're going to get found out. You're just going to hurt your own reputation. And I think for big companies, like the one that I didn't name, it's not an issue because they don't really care. They've been at it for years. But for smaller businesses, like, you know, myself, we rely entirely on reputation and delivering for our clients and then them referring us on to other ones. So it kind of comes down to, I think, ethics as well, and being an ethical marketer, ethical email marketer. That's another tangent we could go down.
Yeah, I would agree with you. So true. And, you know, you were saying you're a MailChimp partner, and I appreciate that. I think what people need to do is use the tool that they know and stop jumping around tools. It drives me nuts. I have a couple of people I know that they've used 5 email tools in 5 months, and it's like, guys, how are you getting any work done? What shiny object is sitting in front of your eyes?
How are your emails getting delivered as well? Jumping all over the platforms. Delivered?
And like, stop jumping around. Settle on a platform, MailChimp or something else, and then determine what you can do with that platform and then use it. Yeah. One of the reasons I went to ConvertKit was because of the creative integration. For me, the integration with Castos, the integration with a number of things, because the creative makes my life easy.
Castos is amazing.
Yep. I've been using Castos for over a year and a half, and the team up at Castos is amazing. You know, a shout out to those guys, because they make delivering this podcast really easy, to be honest with you. And if you have a question, they're there. It's easy peasy.
Yeah, I think Mike Oliver also did their website redesign as well, didn't he?
Mike redesigned their website all in Gutenberg too.
Yeah,
Mike did it.
Gorgeous.
There's a lot of big name podcasters using it. Nathan Wrigley uses it. Bob Dunn uses it. Matt Medeiros works for Castos and uses it. There's a lot. It's the creative spot. It's the creative spot, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I would agree.
And they just, and that's kind of what I look for, whether it's in the ESP or anything else, is how's your level of support? How's your comfort level with support? And I'm not one to go to support very often, but when I do, I got a problem.
Yeah.
And are they going to help you? And by the way, how long is it going to take them to get back to you? I can tell you stories. When I was an Infusionsoft heavy user, and I'm Infusionsoft Keep certified, whereas Infusionsoft certified, it would take them 3 days to get back to me.
Right.
And I just don't have 3 days, to be honest.
I think,
especially when the client says, I want this now.
Yeah, I was going to say, clients can't necessarily wait that long either, definitely not. I'm kind of glad. I'm glad. It's nice to have, I'm like, we have a lot of common anyway, but I like that you're like me in the sense that whenever you are choosing a product, and it's not necessarily an ESP, it could be any SaaS product or anything like that, that support is one of the most important things. Because you say it's fine until things go wrong, but then, you know, if there's no support there whatsoever, it's going to take too long, it's going to be an issue. And I think that's, for me, more so actually than either be very close, but more so than pricing, support would be the most important thing for me whenever I'm choosing a new tool.
I think too many people get caught on that price point.
Yeah.
Realizing it's an investment in you and your business.
Oh, 100%.
Simon, this conversation has been great. If somebody wants to talk to you about email marketing or anything else, how's the best way to get a hold of you?
Best way to get hold of me is my website. Good luck with my Northern Irish accent, but if you Google SRH Design, or you can look me up, Simon Harper, on LinkedIn or SRH Design on Twitter. I'm very active on LinkedIn and Twitter. Need to work on my website. Ironic, being a website designer, that you never have enough time to do your own. Yep. So social is probably the best, or obviously my three emails a week. So email marketing and sign up to my newsletter is a great place to do that too. And you can do that anywhere. You can do that on Twitter, on LinkedIn, or my website.
Yeah, and I would say get on Simon's email list, because it's well worth to read. It's one I read every week, so get on it, have a read. He puts out some really great tips out there, and it's pretty engaging.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time, Simon. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
This episode of the STM Show is sponsored by Stunning Digital Marketing, the agency to handle all your WordPress website security needs. Go on over to stunningdigitalmarketing.com and find out how we can help you secure your website so you no longer have an issue with backups, being hacked, or your website being compromised. That's stunningdigitalmarketing.com. A very special thank you to Simon for joining me on this edition of the STM Show. Thank you for listening to this edition of the STM Show. The STM Show is brought to you by Rob Cairns and Stunning Digital Marketing. For more information about Rob Cairns and Stunning Digital Marketing, go to stunningdigitalmarketing.info. From here, you can connect to us on social media, go to our website, and even go to the podcast to subscribe. This podcast is dedicated to my late father, Bruce Cairns. Dad, I miss you very much. Keep your feet on the ground. Keep reaching for the stars. Make your business succeed.